Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Pixels, where we cover the news from the video game world and industry. My name is Patrick Beja, and we have a bunch of stuff to go through today. We're going to be talking about the Nintendo Direct from yesterday, depending on where you live. We're going to be talking about World of Warcraft Classic, which has really taken the world, the real world, by storm in a way that I think many didn't expect. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of other things. And to help me do all of that, I'm very happy to be welcoming back to the show Taliesin. I can't remember if we say your first name. Yes,
we usually say Nick here, I think.
Right,
we're very
right.
Grown up and professional here. We call me Nick here. And then everyone's like, I don't know who this Nick is. He sounds a lot like Taliesin, and I hate that guy. I'm here to help, Patrick.
Thank you. I definitely need your help because I'm not into WoW Classic and you are. So
you old curmudgeon.
I know. We're going to be talking about that. I'm not going to be talking a lot because I've been saying bad things about World of Warcraft
You have been attracting the ire of the internet, Patrick. I've seen it.
A little bit.
You are public enemy number one in this community.
But I'm
looking forward to putting you straight.
I have refined my, it's forced me to think a lot about why I feel those feelings. And I think I've managed to put them into a more understandable, even for myself, way. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. And mostly I'll let you talk because you're excited about it. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say there. But first, let's start with a delicious amuse-bouche, the Nintendo Direct that happened just a few hours ago, with a ton of games mentioned, many of them, most of them, being games that are being, you know, ported over to the Switch, but still, and many of them are coming out today. Like every other game was like, and it's available today. Snap Switch, and another game, and it's available today. Like it's everything today in this Nintendo Direct, almost. But a bunch of things, some things we were expecting, some things we weren't. Is there anything that you are specifically, because we can't mention all the games. It's impossible. There were like, I don't know, 50 games mentioned. Anything that stood out for you that you would like to mention here?
Yeah. I just like to say this announcement when it came out yesterday was like all my Christmases and dreams come true. It's a beautiful thing. And if there's a recurring theme of the show today, Patrick, it's reveling in nostalgia and rose-tinted specs. And everything seems aimed exactly at my generation in this show. And I absolutely love it. I'm having, just reading this list of games that are coming out, SNES games for the Switch, I'm so excited. You've got F-Zero in there, which I've been waiting to play again for absolutely ages because I can't be bothered downloading ports and
emulators
and things like that. Yeah, exactly. Obviously, Legend of Zelda and Super Mario Kart and all things like games that like genuinely are really good games.
So wait a second. Let's detail that because you glossed over. But the Super Nintendo games, I think they have the longest name in the world for this feature. Super Nintendo Entertainment System for Nintendo Switch Online is what it is. So essentially, they're adding Super NES games to the Switch Online library, which already included NES games. And that's something we were expecting to see, but they have confirmed it's coming, I think, today. They said it was tomorrow, so maybe today or tomorrow. And it's at no additional cost. So I speculated they might, you know, do something, another tier for Switch Online, but they aren't, at least now. And Super NES games are coming, and you're happy.
And lots of them, yeah. And that's the thing, because I was kind of assuming they'd be a bit stingy about it and put out maybe a tiny little handful every now and then, which is kind of Nintendo's way with sort of retro games generally. The sheer breadth of choice of the Super Nintendo games there at the moment has got me incredibly excited. Because NES games, they're fun from a kind of, let's look at the box art and let's jump in sort of way, but they're not really very good games.
I agree. Whereas, I think the 16-bit generation is when it started. I mean, of course, some people love the 8-bit generation games themselves, but it's when it started being like universally games that you can actually play forever because they're just visually appealing and good games, period. Better than back then. Yeah,
I mean, Super Mario World is going to be a good game whenever you play it and wherever you play it, and playing it on my Switch is absolutely perfect. That's gonna be fantastic. So I'm gonna get all of those, I'm gonna play all of them, like genuinely enjoy them. If Shadowrun was on there as well, it'd be the best list of games maybe ever. and they're all from the Super Nintendo. That might be my generation bias kind of coming through a little bit there, but even Super Soccer, I'm excited to playing, and that's a terrible game.
That's not part of the list of game. Yeah, that's not part of the list of awesome games that I was mentioning.
Not of the awesome games, but it's on the list though, Patrick. I'm gonna play it.
Fair enough. But yeah, you're right. They're basically including almost everything we were I was hoping for in my fever dreams, and certainly Super Mario World. I'm going to be on planes a little bit over the fall. I mean, there are so many things I want to play, but I'm probably going to be playing that. So yeah, definitely excited about that. Anything else that jumped at you?
What, from the announcement in general?
Yeah.
Let me just go through it all. Obra Dinn, obviously, the kind of game that sort of see as being the reason why my Switch exists, a game like Return of the Obra Dinn, which is a game that came out and everyone said, this is a really good game. You're a grown-up and you really like games and you're going to enjoy this game. And it's kind of, you know, the reason why you play games, honestly. And I'm like, yes, that's amazing. And then I watch like a video about it on YouTube and I never get around to play it. And for me, that's what the Switch is for. When something comes out on Switch, I'm like, well, this is perfect. I don't have to be sitting in front of my PC. I can be taking it out on trains and planes and on the toilet and things like that.
Right.
So I'll download it and I'll buy that game so hard. And I might even play it. You never even know.
That happens a lot for me, buying games.
I haven't played 70% of the games that I've downloaded onto my Switch. But they're there and I could play them at
just
any
in
moment.
Case. And the knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
The knowledge.
Totally. Yeah. And Obra Dinn is totally going to join that list and I'm looking forward to it. And of course, the big sort of news from a Blizzard point of view, which interests us both irrationally, I guess, is Overwatch.
Coming October 15, some little tiny tidbits like motion control, which I don't think is going to be a thing for many people. But yeah, Overwatch coming to Switch. The team mentioned a couple of years ago that they would be interested in looking at it, but you know, it's difficult and et cetera, et cetera. I'm wondering how graphically the graphical fidelity will be. But it's going to be there. I think it's not going to be quite for me, but I don't really play Overwatch on consoles. But if there is a console I'll play it on, it's going to be the Switch because...
it's that old story, isn't it? Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, actually, if you had played it on console, because I have, and it's not much fun after coming from the PC. For obvious reasons of kind of movement and mobility and aiming, and playing Widowmaker on a console is the most miserable thing that I've ever done on a console. but I bought it for my brother on PlayStation, and my brother is a really good barometer of what's going to be super successful because, you know, me and you, Patrick, we're game enthusiasts. We kind of make our living out of it as well. We're not actually the target audience for most games that want to be world-conquering massive games. You know, my brother is. We're not the kind of people that make Madden or FIFA or Skyrim the biggest games ever in the history of the world. My brother is the kind of person that makes those games the biggest.
The kind of person who buys maybe a couple of year games a year,
exactly.
The big ones, so, the sports ones, and
You bet. So I got him Overwatch on his PlayStation when that released. And yeah, there was about a day's worth of play on that because it's a difficult game to play on console. It doesn't feel as satisfying. It's not as good. But you're right. If there's any console I'm going to play it on, it will be Switch. And maybe the movement controls will help with that. I've seen them kind of using movement controls in the little trailer that they put out for Widowmaker aiming and things like that. Maybe that'll make it a bit easier, but I'm, you know.
I mean, I do want to say that there are a lot of people who play it on consoles and who love it. I think it's more about where you start. Like, I've started playing Destiny, obviously, on consoles because that's where it was, and I love it. And there are tons of even FPS games that I play on consoles because I kind of associate them with the consoles. But I do agree that if you kind of get used to playing a certain game with a mouse and keyboard, you're probably going to want to be playing that. You know, it's going to be difficult for you to do that Switch, except maybe on the Switch. I mean, the thing is, there are so many games that I want to play on Switch. It's probably not, Overwatch is not going to be one that I'm going to spend my Switch time on. But we now have Diablo and Overwatch on Switch. BlizzCon might be a fun time to whip out the Switch and play Blizzard games at BlizzCon with other people mobily.
Yeah, so, and when they put WoW Classic on there as well, you're going to have a really healthy library of games on the Switch. I think Overwatch is an interesting one as well because, of course, it's a 100% online game. I mean, you literally can't play it unless you're online, has sort of implications.
I was going to say, so is Diablo, but that's not true. On consoles, you can play it offline,
not true.
Yeah.
And so there's literally no way you can play any Overwatch at all without being online. So I think it comes bundled with 3 months of Nintendo online services as well, which is really good. But I, you know, obviously, again, we're enthusiasts. We have those subscriptions. We get online with it and we do those things. But again, that's going to be something that could be a major factor in whether people pick that game up for Switch, because that's another expensive service that you're paying for.
All right, that's too much time spent on Overwatch, but we are fans, probably the biggest Overwatch fans you know. I don't know if that's true. There are a lot of Overwatch fans in the world. All right, anything else? There's Super Kirby Clash, which looked... It's available today, by the way. It looks like baby Super Smash Brothers, like PvE Super... I don't know. It's one of those games where, as you were saying, people like us, it's not really for us... But especially with Nintendo, they have these games and elements of some games targeted at younger players, which we don't get, but they have a lot of fun time with. And there is no alternative for in the gaming industry. It's only on Nintendo, and those games are perfect for them. I think it's something like that. And it's free to start, too. So easy to get into. There's a Trials of Mana remake, which old people will enjoy a bunch of weird
so
stuff.
Many remakes that old people enjoy. It's the theme of the show. Jedi Knight 2 as well.
Xenoblade Chronicles. There's a game called Little Town Hero by Game Freak.
See, that's the other one that I'm really looking forward to as
really?
Well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, seriously. I love that kind of stuff on the Switch. Again, that's the kind of thing I wouldn't touch on my PC or a console, but you put that on the Switch, I'll be like, yes, that looks amazing. That looks exactly what I want.
And you'll buy it and maybe not play it.
I think that's really unfair, Patrick. I'll play about 5-10 minutes of it, and I'll really enjoy it.
So many games I've played 2 minutes. Divinity 2 Definitive Edition is coming with cross-save with Steam, so you can import your save from there. That is really cool. That I really I really like. I mean, so many other things. There is a bunch of videos for Link's Awakening, which is coming a day before my birthday. Thank you very much. Terry Bugger from SNK Fighting Games coming to Super Smash Brothers. So much stuff. I think we're going to stop there, but it was...
We're just listing games at this point, Patrick.
Yeah,
we're just
exactly.
saying names and going, oh!
Oh my God, this too! Oh, Tetris 99 update! And it's nothing incredible, but a lot of small things as usual for, you know, just a random direct that was announced 2 days ago and just showed up. All right, let's talk a little bit about WoW Classic, and I'm going to let you talk because you didn't play it back in the day, and you never had the experience, the difficult, rugged experience of classic, of vanilla 15 years ago. So tell us in what spirit you approached it initially and how it's been going for the past 10 days.
Right, Patrick. I was born into the coddled, cotton wool wrapped era of Wrath of the Lich King when that first released. So I'm a Wrath baby. Mm-hmm. I'm a WoW baby, even because I've only played this game for an entire decade of my entire life. So I'm a baby and I don't understand what the real World of Warcraft is all about. So I've been fascinated with the idea of vanilla sort of ever since I started playing as a result, because it was this great intangible sort of unreachable, untouchable, golden sort of time, you know, and quite soon after I started playing, well, a couple of years after I started playing WoW, obviously the Cataclysm expansion happened and lots of the old world was literally redesigned and rebuilt and all the quests and things changed. And in fact, it's probably the reason I've got a YouTube channel now is because my interest in YouTube as an entire platform originated from me trying to find videos of vanilla WoW sort of gameplay
and talking
about it and just seeing what it looked like.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And
my interest in podcasting came from trying to get to have people to talk and hear talk about WoW more. It's you know, created so many vocations.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where my habit of watching YouTube videos came from, particularly WoW content. And lo, here I am. And so that it's always been kind of a dream to play vanilla for me. So I've always been 100% in favor of classic WoW, and I've been hashtag no changes. You know, I want the museum experience.
Played a quote unquote private server? You never explored?
Well, no, because I never played vanilla, and this was a great fear of mine and why I never played classic servers. Because frankly, it looked a bit hard to set up and I had better things to do. But also because I never played vanilla, and I understand that private servers aren't always completely accurate.
Right.
I wouldn't know if something was being accurate or not. Mm. So I wouldn't see something and go, oh, that's something they've done wrong. That wasn't in vanilla. I would be blissfully unaware, and I don't want that. I want to be safe in the knowledge that Blizz have done this from the original code and that it is as accurate as it could possibly be, and that I am experiencing it as closely as I possibly could. To how it would be, because obviously there are things that you can't help, like it has to have Battle.net integration, and in fact the way I'm playing it is completely unlike my initial experiences in WoW, which is something you can never recreate either. You know, when you jump into that game for the first time, you're completely clueless and you're wandering around. You're literally learning how to put things on your bars and to keybind, and you have no idea how to play the game. I always think the one of the major steps you take in learning how to play WoW, you need to go and watch some videos on YouTube or read a guide somewhere. And that's like a genuine step in learning how to play WoW, that moment where you realize there's a lot more in this game than I can possibly work out for myself.
And
taking that step, and that's a step that comes usually about 3 or 4 months into play for most people. Mm-hmm. But of course, everyone knows that they have to read guides before they even start, and things like that. So it will never, it for me, stepping into it, never going to be a recreation of my first time in WoW. It was never going to be a nostalgia trip, because obviously I wasn't there. Although it does have some nice Wrath of the Lich King feels as well in those early starting areas that I remember. You know, having the talent trees and all the old functionality and the general feel and ethos of it is very familiar from a nostalgic point of view. But because I never played vanilla, I am approaching it from the point of view of just playing it as a game.
Up a little bit. I'll switch the servers and it should be back up now.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the last thing you heard me say?
Oh, we heard everything, but it was just okay. I was using a different server. Okay. So, you're kind of making it into a very long description, but what I really want to know is, are you enjoying it? I mean, I'm sure you are, but.
No, it's terrible, obviously. No, I'm having a great time. Of course I am, because I really like World of Warcraft, and it doesn't feel as different as I was expecting, really. But I knew that from playing... Yeah, seriously. Yeah. But I knew that from playing the beta anyway. It felt like leveling an alt with no heirlooms or other characters or help like that. It's also worth noting that I'm playing this game as someone who... and a streamer, and has a ready-made community.
I think that's important to note.
Oh, totally. When me and Evie logged on the first night, into that cacophony of billions of people just melting the servers, we were instantly in a group of five players who we knew. Questing around and having fun. On day two, we set up our guild, and you know, hundreds of people joined, and we raised the gold we needed to have a guild tabard, and everyone bought a guild tabard. That was day two. You know, who did that on day two of vanilla WoW? As such, that, you know, we are the guild masters of a guild that have like 700 people in, and we have groups to do everything we can possibly want, and to quest with, and to dungeon with, and to tell us where we need to be going, what we need to be doing, and helping us out with any sort of differences. And those are the things that I like about WoW most anyway, is that social aspect and the grouping aspect and just playing with other people and chatting with other people.
You're not really fumbling around, like you're not having trouble tapping mobs, because this is one of the big hang-ups I had when I first, you know, I played for 20 minutes in Classic. It was like, well, there are so many people and I can't get the mobs I need for my quest because it's impossible to tap the mobs, which of course is not an issue in later versions of the game. But you're not having those issues because in a group of five, it's five times much easier. Well,
it's a lot easier, yeah, for sure. And obviously on the first night, it was horrible. And you'd spend, we spent 2 hours completing two quests, you know.
So you did have kind of the same experience I did.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, that's part of the fun on the first night. If that was the case on day six, then it would be different. Obviously, like half the fun of any new WoW expansion, and this feels like a new expansion to me in many ways, is how terrible it is. and what a scrum it is, you know?
What's different, though? If it feels like an expansion, you already have your community there and having fun with them. What feels different, I wonder?
The leveling... is famously much more involved, and a lot slower. And there is something really fun about feeling that your character is rubbish, which hasn't happened in WoW for a little while, you know?
In more recent iterations, you are extremely powerful, even if you start an ult. If you start an ult now, you're going to destroy everything and nothing's going to stop you until end game, essentially.
Absolutely. And we still destroy everything because there's five of us. But there is something very satisfying about all running around in guild tabards, and because we're doing the same quests. The gearing is certainly in the leveling feels a lot more linear than it does in modern WoW, and a lot more sort of pre-planned in a way. So we do this quest because we know this is the quest that we do to get our cool blue staff. And then we've all got a blue staff that we run around with, and we're kind of uniform in that respect. And this is the quest we do to get our cool red hood, and it's like the first helm that we get in the entire game. And we did that quest, and then we all had our red hood, and we wore our red hoods, and it just looked really cool. And it's just little kind of community aspects like that. There's certain elements of the vanilla experience that I'm completely bypassing. That whole aspect of learning the game, and that whole aspect of not knowing what I'm doing, which could be there because I don't know my way around lots of these. I'm leveling as Horde as well, which I never did pre-Cata before. So, you know, I don't know half of these zones. I don't know where the quests are, what I'm supposed to be doing. And I don't like reading guides if I can help it. So I wouldn't know which dungeons I was supposed to go to at what times. But I'm playing the game the way that I really enjoy, which I really enjoy. And people say that, you know, vanilla is more this type of game and BFA is more this type of game. And that's never been my experience with WoW. I've always played WoW exactly how I wanted to. And that's exactly what I'm doing now. So yeah, I'm getting a lot out of it.
It's great to hear. I mean, a lot of people are saying the exact same thing as you are. And I think what they're getting out of it, which is a little bit different from the more recent iterations, is that more... RPG-esque experience of having to progress a character and feeling weaker and having to get new spells and et cetera, which I'm super glad that people are getting. And as I mentioned in a couple of other shows, it's something that was, unless you went and on a private server, which was very difficult, especially recently, it's something you couldn't do. Like, there are very few gaming experiences that have become completely unavailable. And that was one of them. So it's great that it's possible to do it again. I think my approach to it, as I said in the beginning of the show, I sort of refined my view on it a little bit. And the reason I'm not adverse to WoW Classic, I think that's, it comes off that way sometimes, but it's not the case. The reason I take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, I guess, is the fact that having lived through that evolution, it seems to me that all of those difficult elements, like, you know, tapping the mobs, having to find a group, which you don't have to, but having to sit 2 hours in a capital city to find a group and go do a dungeon that lasts 2 hours. All of these things, I think, are great fun. And I did have great fun back then. But they become tedious when you're playing this game every day for years, right? And after you've done all of that for many, many days and months, the natural progression of the game becomes, I think, to make it a little bit more arcadey and a little bit more easy. And that experience that I had is what leads me to say things like, you know, oh, but you'll see in 6 months, you will feel differently.
Oh, for sure. But, and I think you're right as well. That said,
I just want to finish that. The thought, which a lot of people have told me, sure, maybe, but we don't care. We're having fun now. And this, it will still be a great experience. And those 6 months will be awesome. And we will be glad to have had it. Even if at some point, maybe theoretically, it becomes tedious. And I think the disconnect that I've had with people who, you know, we sort of talk in parallel to one another, I say one thing, they say another thing, is based in that. In the fact that I'm thinking, oh, my experiences and what happens 6 months, 1 year, 2 years down the line, and others are saying, I don't care about that. I'm just having fun now. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you hear both good points on both those sides. That being said, your kind of observations about sitting in towns and waiting for groups and things like that is something that really doesn't have to happen anymore. You know, I'm a streamer, I have a community, but Discord communities exist, the online resources exist. Just the fact that you know you can go online and that's going to help you find groups rather than have to do it in game exists in a way that it didn't back in vanilla. So I feel like live-in streamlines the experience as much as modern WoW does.
I agree, but then what's the difference from between that and an LFG kind of? You know what?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I would say not much. That's definitely the point. And I would say that the things that I'm enjoying about Classic are incredibly similar to the things that I enjoy about BFA. Mm. My favorite things about my experience in Classic so far, and list my favorite things about my experience in BFA this expansion, it would be a very similar list because those are the things that I enjoy about WoW.
Mm. Well, you know what? The conclusion to all of this and the past 2 or 3 weeks that I've discussed this extensively, the conclusion is that really I'm super happy that people like you and others have the opportunity to enjoy it. And that's great. That's something that we didn't think we were going to get. And I hope people really have fun. So, and we'll see what happens in 6 months to a year. Maybe people will tell me, you know what? I love having to queue to search for a healer for 2 hours and going to Skullomance, and that dungeon lasts another 2 hours. And I have to go on a 2 hours trip just to get there because I happen to have been in, you know, Stranglethorn Vale.
I think that's a without wanting to extend this conversation too much longer, I think that's a genuinely interesting philosophical question. And I feel like throughout its life, just because of its sheer popularity and the amount that's been around and the amount of attention it has had to keep, WoW has been at the forefront of kind of discovering new things about video games and online communities. And I think it's clearly doing that now with Classic as well. People talk about old school RuneScape and things like that, but no other game has had this kind of popularity for so long. And to have WoW Classic is really interesting, because that's absolutely true. I'm level 28 now, I think, in game, after a week of playing. It took me a good 4 months to get to level 28 first time I played this game, and that was in Wrath, which was super easy, you know.
So
it's true that within a year, pretty much everyone who has persevered with WoW Classic will be at max level, which is not something that happened in vanilla. You know, that percentage of players who are playing the game being at max level and relying on end game content for their fun, it's going to be, again, a lot more familiar to modern WoW players than this extended sort of like leveling process that they're in the middle of now. And I'm really interested to see what happens there, because, you know, when you've got 90% of players in Classic WoW being at max level, happened in vanilla. And I want to see what differences kind of come out of the community and what happens there.
I think you'd be surprised. There were a lot of people who were max level back in vanilla. It took a little bit longer, but it was still, you know, maybe it took 6 months, but it was still a year of max level play for everyone in there. So I think it was quite significant. I remember I actually didn't start playing WoW when it launched. I jumped in a few months later, and I still remember people, oh my God, it was so nightmarish to do Skullmance and Dire Maul and all of those. I mean, you know, I know that so many people have told me, oh, you don't know how I will feel about it. And if everyone loves it, it's awesome. But people don't realize how tedious it becomes. I don't think so. And maybe I have, you know, my memory is I have a memory that is damaged by a decade and a half of not resentment, but remembering the tedium of it. But I'm like you. I'm very curious to see what happens in 6 months, and we'll see. But if people stop playing, as I was saying, it doesn't matter. They will have had that experience and it will have been fun. And if they keep playing, then it's awesome that they can keep having that experience. And it's equally awesome. So there's really no rancor in the way I'm describing it. And I hope people don't take it as such. It's just my experience that I'm relating, and maybe other people's experiences will be different. I hope.
And I think that's one of the problems, if there is a problem, is again, we live in a world which maybe is a bit different from 2004, where there's a tendency to need to take a side in any kind of argument. You know, it's not enough that I like Classic. I have to say that I like Classic because it does everything right that BFA does wrong. And it's not enough for me to just be bored of Classic. I have to say it's because people only liked it because of the nostalgia and things like that. So there's this tendency to kind of try and create drama and debate where there doesn't need to be any. And it's a win-win for Blizzard either way. There's no coincidence that this game came out in August, which is the summer, the same as the last couple of live World of Warcraft expansions. If they continue to put out a live expansion every 2 years, and you know, if they can bring out the Burning Crusade 2 years from now and the Wrath of the Lich King Classic 2 years after that, I mean, they finally realized their dream of having a World of Warcraft expansion every year, haven't they?
That's exactly what I was saying on the instance last week. And our theory, I think we came up with that idea last week. I don't think they will do it, but it would be interesting for them to have the classic track and the modern track, and to have the new expansions without the arcadification of the game. Like, don't include LFG, don't include all of those, tapping mobs is if they can, tapping mobs becomes easier, or there's no more tapping mobs and stuff like that. And get those expansions in classic style, so you know, within 10 years we would have the current version of WoW or so, or something like that, but with the classic, more RPG like vanilla style. That would be
I mean, that's something I've heard a lot of people talk about. I would argue it defies the entire point of classic in of itself. I mean, how far do you take that? When you have your Burning Crusade classic, do you ignore the quality of life improvements that came with Burning Crusade and keep it classic style? So it's not actually a recreation of... But what about people who want to play Burning Crusade? What about people that have been waiting to play a recreation of Burning Crusade? They don't get that then.
No, they don't. But Burning Crusade, you can mostly play because, let's be honest, the improvements, quote unquote, to the quality of life stuff came to WoW. I know a lot of people like to dismiss the like a lot of people like up to Wrath and a lot of things afterwards in their mind was not real WoW anymore. But a lot of the quality of life improvements that were implemented very early on in Burning Crusade and in Wrath of the Lich King. And people still thought that those experiences were amazing. And for the most part, you can go back and play Burning Crusade as it was back then, today in modern WoW. It wouldn't be that different if it was launched in classic.
I think Burning Crusade purists would disagree with you wholeheartedly.
I'm sure they would.
But the thing is, what's going to happen if that was to happen and you say, hey, here's a version of Burning Crusade, but it's not Burning Crusade, it's WoW Classic, but it's Burning Crusade. So we're basically just pasting the content of Burning Crusade on top of WoW Classic, but without any of the balancing or system changes. And hey, you still can't be a shaman on Alliance and exactly, enjoy. Yeah. Well, obviously, what's going to happen is people are going to say, oh, that's great, that's really fun, but can we have the Burning Crusade as well? So then you'll have Burning Crusade as well. And boom, you've got four different WoW games right there. You've got Live WoW, you've got Classic, you've got Classic Burning Crusade, and you've got Burning Crusade, Classic Burning Crusade. And at some point, it just becomes ridiculous.
But if you don't do that, if you just add expansions as they've been released, in 15 years, you get back to where we are now, and you have to start the WoW Classic again.
They've already said they would stop at Burning Crusade, at Wrath of the Lich King. When they've talked about this idea before, they said, you know, it would be the pre-Cataclysm world, in which we count as being the classic world, and we would stop at that. And I think most people would be pretty happy with that.
I agree. Yeah, that is actually quite feasible, so it would make sense.
That's still 6 years of yearly expansion releases, Patrick. I think they'd be pretty happy with that.
And you know what? As much as I dislike Classic, I could see myself jumping into Burning Crusade or Wrath of the Lich King. Not for a long time, but just for a little bit. Because those are my prime... actually Classic as well, but... Anyway, we'll see if that happens. But yeah,
I have to say, I feel like I should say at this point, after gushing about Classic so much, and having said that I started in Wrath of the Lich King, that's where my nostalgia is, I would have almost zero interest in playing on a Burning Crusade or Wrath of the Lich King server.
Oh, really? That's super interesting. Maybe it is. Maybe it is a lot of... Actually, that's not true. There's a lot of people who did play back in Classic who are enjoying it now as well. I was going to say maybe it's people who didn't try it who have a chance to do it now and who are really enjoying it. But I know a lot of people who actually played through it are also enjoying it too. So,
pretty much as people say that Burning Crusade is like the peak of WoW or Wrath is the peak of WoW, I think anyone who was going to come back at Burning Crusade Classic or have a look at Wrath Classic would have come back for Classic.
That's true.
More people back to the game than would have come otherwise.
Yeah.
And
the conclusion of all of this is that this is really good business for Blizzard, and I certainly did not expect it to be as successful as it is. In no world did I imagine. I thought some people would play it. But already, even though I have questions about how successful it will be down the line, I never would have thought that many people would play for so long. I was wrong, and I have no problem admitting it, but I didn't think it would be that. I think most people would jump in and play for, you know, 3 or 4 hours and think, this is, you know, ancient crap, and stop playing. And what I didn't factor in, I guess, is the, you know, we're going to get to Gears of War in a second, but earlier in the summer, I played through the entirety of Gears of War 4 And I described it as an archaeological gaming experience. And I had a lot of fun playing that and looking, you know, from the outside as kind of the way we made games 10 or 15 years ago. I know Gears 4 is much more recent than that, but really follows the template of the older games in the series that date back to 2006 or something. And I should, you know, I'm only connecting the dots now, but I think a lot of people are genuinely, and I did genuinely enjoy Gears 4, and I think a lot of people are genuinely enjoying WoW, maybe with some elements of that, of the appreciation for the way we used to do things, whereas for some people, having played it a year nonstop every day, it had become tedious back then.
Oh, for sure.
But
and I think there's, yeah. I think there's something a lot more simple than that as well. I think there's definitely an element of people enjoying the game systems and things more than in modern WoW, and I think that's genuine. But also, there's an element of everyone loves leveling in WoW, right? Like everyone jumps into a new expansion and they will level up to max level and they will thoroughly enjoy it. And then they'll drop it into the next expansion. That's a genuine way that people play WoW. And the leveling part of any new expansion is often the most critically acclaimed part of any new expansion as well. And it's just something that on a very basic visceral level, people really enjoy doing. And vanilla has got the longest leveling experience of all WoW experiences. So it's obviously something that people are enjoying. And when the game is full of players and everyone's talking about it, there's a major fear of missing out and there's a major hype about it as well. That makes you want to play it as well. And that helps you get through any kind of boring grinding when a community is completely buzzing and kicking and alive. And of course that will change. I mean, there are more people playing Classic now than there ever will be again.
Yeah, that's
fair thing to say,
certain.
Which is the opposite of how vanilla worked, which had an incremental steady increase in players throughout its life. So again, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out as well. And I think we're going to see some very empty servers and lots of server transfers a year or so down the line, to be expected. But yeah, it's I think don't underestimate the power of just leveling a character.
Yeah, very good point. Maybe what I really have post-traumatic stress disorder syndromes about is not WoW Classic, it's more the end game of WoW Classic. Maybe there is something there that might be more accurate. Anyway, it certainly took the world by storm, and I didn't expect it because that is WoW Classic was all the entire gaming community could talk about for 2 weeks, and we've been talking about it nonstop for about 30 minutes, maybe a little bit.
Sorry, everyone. But,
it's, you know, it was the actual news of the gaming community for a while. So, all right. Another game I did want to mention, I didn't play it quite as much as WoW in my life, but I did play a few hours. It's Control. I'm sure you've heard about the game. It's Remedy's latest game, came out about a week ago, and no one really knew what to expect, but it has been surprisingly acclaimed, and it pushed me to actually get it and give it a try. And oh my God, this is an incredible achievement. I can't quite say it's an incredible game yet because I'm very early on, and gameplay wise it's interesting, but it doesn't have enough variety for me to judge it. But artistically, I don't think I've ever seen any game or even almost any TV series or movie do the things that Control is doing. A lot of people have been talking about that aspect of the game, but to me, it is even more incredible than what I've heard or seen, because it's like it is the closest to art that I have seen in any game. And that includes indie projects like, you know, I don't know, Journey or Monument Valley or anything like that, in that it's not just art for the sake of art. It's incorporating art in the context of a third-person shooter game, visually and conceptually and on the sound perspective and on the writing aspect. It is a little bit X-Files, Twin Peaksy.
Well, I'm gonna stop you there, Patrick, because this is really interesting, but I'm gonna ask you to kind of put that even more into the basics for me now, because my experience of this game is seeing people rave about it on Twitter, and seeing screenshots of it and going, oh, cool. Okay, so Black Widow is in this game, and you run around, and it looks like a AAA title, but people say it's really cool and really interesting. So can you explain to me what is different about it?
So I don't want to spoil it, so I'm not going to go into too much detail, because I think experiencing it for the first time is part of the, well, experience. But it creates a mood and an atmosphere that is unique. The character, the main character, Jessie, which you were referencing, talks to herself. And so she kind of explains things about the world, but she doesn't do it in a straightforward way. She does it in a very cryptic way, as if the world, she has already lived through a lot of things, and the way she talks about what's surrounding her is informed by all of the things she's lived through. There's metaphysical stuff, as I was saying, I was referencing X-Files and Twin Peaks. And she talks about these things in a very natural way, but they create this sense of a larger world that you are inhabiting in a way that is very difficult to create in a game. That's from just her talking to you, or talking to herself in her head. Just that already creates all of this. But visually, it is incredibly inventive. So you have this building that is kind of a FBI kind of administration building, but it is also kind of science fiction-y, metaphysical, shape-shifting building. So visually, sometimes you will enter a room and almost in Inception-like manner, the walls will move. And the arrangement of the structure of the building will change before your eyes. And that creates a feeling of, you know, otherworldliness that I have rarely experienced before. The color palette is dark and again, contributes to that atmosphere, but in a way that is never obstructing your enjoyment of the visuals. The sound design is also expertly done to enhance that eeriness that it creates. The writing is also expertly done and coherent with everything else. I'm saying the writing, there are documents that you find. I'm trying to stay away from specifics, but...
And I appreciate that, and I'm thankful for it.
It's not like a AAA, like Assassin's Creed, where it's like an arcade-y fun experience. It's fun, but it transports you somewhere else. And the way it manages to create that vessel that transports you is through expertly crafted art and you know, craftsmanship. So I don't know, does it answer your question, or is it just more cryptic?
It genuinely does, and it's one very important question which may help decide whether I play this game or not. Can I get it on the Switch?
Not yet.
Count me out. I'm
probably gone. One of the most graphically intensive games you will find currently on computers.
Oh, really? That's really interesting, because it certainly doesn't seem that way.
You can tone down the graphics.
Yeah.
It doesn't run super well like on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, except for the X, so you might want to get it on PC. I have a GeForce 970, so a few years old, quite a few years old, and it works fine, but obviously I don't get all the bells and whistles graphically, and still it's incredibly enjoyable and transporting.
Isn't it terrible? Because you were talking about how clever and satisfying and mature and intelligent the game was, I kind of assumed the graphics were going to be bad. That's how my brain is programmed to appreciate video
games.
And looking at screenshots and things, it's very it is a very dark color palette, and it's very brutalist, and it's very sort of and so yeah, it's amazing the assumptions you make. Okay, no, it's good. Right,
yeah,
get me back on some other time. We'll talk about Control once I've played it through. We can discuss the spoilers. I can't wait.
Perfect. And also, it's fun, by the way. It, like, gameplay wise, it is fun. Some people like it more than others, but it is definitely fun. It's not just a art trippy experience. Oh, and I'm also looking forward to Gears 5. I mentioned Gears 4 earlier. It obviously, it's not out yet, so we'll talk about it next time, but I'm very much looking forward to it. Apparently, people are saying it's very good as well and stays true to the Gears spirit, but modernizes it, not in, you know, as much as some game reboots have in recent years, but it's a really good game. So looking forward to that. I'll be playing it tonight. All right, this is the not fun part of the show. In my tech shows, I always talk, you know, I always say, you know, I got in this business to talk about phones and fun gadgets, and now we have to talk about government surveillance and that kind of thing. This is in the same kind of in the same spirit. It's not something I want to talk about, but obviously I think we have to. There have been some very serious harassment and violence, both physical and psychological, allegations against prominent members of the gaming community. Obviously, it's mostly female developers talking about male developers and producers and music composers in positions of power. And that happened about 10 days ago. It wasn't a, oh, we hear one person and then it dies out. It was a, we hear two or three people and it sparks a series of victims being encouraged to come forward and having the courage to come forward because they felt less alone. So I don't think that the accusations are really in questions for at least for some of the people who were involved. And then a few days ago, about a week ago, the horrible part upon horrible story happened when one of these perpetrators took his own life, apparently. We're not 100% sure of the details, but it certainly seems like that person, I think we can name him. I hesitated naming people. I did in my friend show. I think I won't because we don't have definitive proof on the others. And we don't on Alec Holoka either, but you know, he's passed away now. So I'll mention his name. And it seems like he is definitely one of the people who's wrongdoing was the most clearly established, even if it wasn't proven in a court of law. It's a horrible situation because obviously, even as bad as what some of the things he did were, and certainly a lot of people have come out saying, including his former coworkers and Scott Benson has put up a Medium post. His coworker when he did Night in the Woods put up a blog post where he explained how problematic and toxic his coworker Alec Holoka could be. As bad as all of this is, obviously no one wants him to, you know, hurt himself or do anything like that. And it brings into question, I mean, obviously he was troubled. He was trying to get better, according to his sister. He was making a lot of effort. But the bad that he did didn't go away because of that. No one wanted him to hurt himself, and yet he did, and that led some people to go out and harass the victims and accusers with what I believe is, you know, motives that are absolutely not what they would claim they are. I don't know if there's any good way of rounding up this story. It's just the reason I want to talk about
it. Like with any story of abuse, there are no winners, are there? And, you know, the victims certainly aren't a winner. In this case, the perpetrator isn't a winner. Video games aren't winning this. No one is winning. And in a story of so many losers and hurt and pain, I mean, my first, I mean, sticking with the Alec Holoka stuff, my first was reading that Scott Benson Medium post that you brought up a couple of days ago, and it sort of popped up on Twitter. And it was genuinely the most heartbreaking thing I think I've ever read. It was so familiar in so many ways to anyone who's ever been in contact with someone whose behavior is a pattern of kind of destruction to themselves and to the people around them. And as tragic and heartbreaking as the destruction that people do to themselves in those situations is, destruction that they do to people around them, whether that be kind of sexual allegations like we've had, but also just social networks being destroyed as well, which is what seemed to happen in Scott Benson's case as well. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've had people in my life who have had that kind of whirlwind of just, they take over your life and kind of your entire life becomes all about them, whether that be because you have a personal relationship or a working relationship with them. And that certainly doesn't make their own personal situation any less tragic. As you say, Alec was clearly an incredibly troubled man. He was on medication. He was trying to make his life better. Really talented man as well. And I think there's an element of, and always has been, and it's something that exists in video games at the moment, of almost the fetishization of the troubled, destructive genius, you know, who we can forgive all of these bad things they do because they made a really cool indie game. And that's very dangerous as well. And that's what we're seeing in the way people are reacting to the accusers who have done nothing wrong. And in a story of this for everyone involved, I find that the most sad part, that we now have to try and hold people back from harassing people that have already been through horrible things. It makes me so angry that this is a part of the community. And I don't know, there's no way you can talk about it and get a proper grip on things, is there? All we can do is kind of listen to the people that knew him and listen to the people that experienced it, and I guess and go from there, which is something that no one really wants to do, and it's hard.
You're right, there's nothing that we can take out of it, except I think maybe what I would like to do, and I think what everyone has been doing in this situation, is sadly we need to listen to the people who speak up and make it so it is possible for them to find the courage to speak up when these things happen, so that they happen less. And however tragic the situation, the specific situation with Alec Holoka is, which it very much is, it doesn't really change the fact that the abuse that we're seeing, which is not unique to the gaming industry, we have to work towards reducing and hopefully at some point making go away. And that goes through listening to the people who are accusing and who are victims. And I know that a lot of people say, you know, there's a presumption, you know, innocent until proven guilty. And certainly that is an essential component of our democracy. But there is also a little bit of experience. And the experience is the accusers have very little to gain in accusing someone just for the shits and giggles. They are, when they do that, they call upon themselves a lot of hardship. And this isn't like accusing a politician to derail their campaign. You know, there is nothing to gain there. It's obscure game developers. The only result, they're not going to make money. They're not going to get fame. The only motivation, maybe there are exceptions, you know, but it's the only motivation is the sense of hurt that they feel and the desire for justice. There's nothing else. So,
and
of course,
honest,
you should be careful, and the innocent until proven guilty thing, you know, is important. But in these cases, it's not as big a factor as some people want to make it be sound.
Sure, and to the only guaranteed outcome of coming forward, sadly, is more harassment from certain areas of the internet, and genuine other threats, having been on a very, very small receiving end of that kind of culture myself, it's terrifying and you know, world changing the accuser in this case would have known full well what was going to happen when she came forward. And I promise you, if she's been through that before, which she has, she didn't want that.
Yeah.
So whatever her motivation was enough to trump that.
And she's been, all but legally proven right in what she was saying now, because we've had many, many... That's what usually happens, by the way. It's not the conspiracy to sully a good man. That's not what happens. That's what happens in some movies. What actually happens in real life in these cases is other people come forward and the thing is proven true. I'm sure there are exceptions, but you can't make your life the general rule through exception. And I think on a much more concrete level, what we can do, you and me and everyone listening, it's usually not to the level of rape and year-long harassment. What it is little things, you know, a sexist joke or a sexist remark. And just like a few years ago, it was perfectly cool to say, "Huh, that's gay." And through mutual learning, we realize maybe that's a little bit insensitive. And maybe
I just
when
like
someone
to say
says
that, I never thought that was cool, Patrick.
You're younger than me. How old are you?
I totally take your point. And it is the only way things are going to change, sadly, is to talk about these things. And look, there are 30 years worth of stories to come out right now, which is why it seems like it happens every day. Mm. And if that's what has to happen to get to a point where things are better and this isn't part of the culture, then so be it. And yeah, you're right. There's not much we from the outside can do apart from, you know, my automatic reaction with some of these people in the last week when I was told about it was to go, "Oh no, not him. I love him." And I don't know if that's the right reaction either. It's
difficult. Well, I mean, it's natural. If they do something work that you admire, of course that's going to be your reaction.
Of course. I guess that's a perfectly natural reaction. It's then what I choose to do and how I choose to react after that initial reaction, I suppose. Yeah. And that's something that I can change. I think the first step has to be not automatically harassing people who come forward. I think that's step
one. But I
one.
Think most people don't do that. I think...
Well, it's too easy to say most people don't do that. It's fine to say most people don't do that. If only 1% of 100,000 people do it, that's still 1,000 things that person has to put up with.
Absolutely. But I don't think we talking here are going to convince those people to not harass them, right? I think... The people listening to us now might be more in a position of when someone is making a boobs joke about a coworker or something, instead of, you know, smiling politely or not wanting to say anything, just say, "Dude, that's not cool." And the first time they'll go like, "Oh, you're such a killjoy," whatever. And after 10 times from different people saying that, maybe they won't do it anymore. And I think that's a much more concrete and that's what I was saying when I was referencing the "this is so gay" saying. It used to be very common. You never hear anyone say "this is so gay" nowadays, or maybe you do, but it's very rare. right? And I think it does change slowly the makeup of society, and that's something we all can do. So, and of course, don't harass.
Do you think there's a problem with I don't want to use the word, but do you think there's a problem with there being a backlash to that kind of thinking now? And a lot of people are making a lot of money and gaining a lot of status by saying the opposite of that and saying, no, you know what? You're right to be able to make boob jokes, and you're right to be able to say things are gay. It's everyone else who's wrong. They're spoiling all your fun. Be proud of that. Do you think that's having an impact on the culture?
I think as shocking as it is now, I do think it's a minority that's very vocal. And I don't think that is the way the world is going. I think the way the world is going, as difficult as it is to see because of all that noise, I think it's going in the right direction. I think we're seeing it a little bit. You know, Gamergate is 5 years old now. It's literally 5 years ago that event happened. The impact it has had on the game industry is certainly harassment and misery for a lot of people, but it has had, I think, zero impact or negligible impact on the direction that the industry is going, in that inclusivity is important to many developers. We've seen more, not enough, but more representation, female representation in games all around. We've seen better, quote unquote, like less objectifying representation. We're seeing women put in more visible position. It's taking time, but it's happening, because the people who actually make the decisions and matter are not the idiots who are waving around, you know, anti-feminist flags. Of course, I know a lot of people will hear this and say, oh, you're crazy. I just read on Twitter that this person was harassed. And of course, it does happen. But look objectively at how the industry has moved since Gamergate. And it will be all towards better representation. And I'm not saying we're there. It's just I'm saying it's moving in the right direction. And Gamergate is not hampering that. If anything, it's showing how necessary it is. So would you agree with that or no?
I would, and I thank you for saying it, because it's made me feel a lot better.
Well, that's what I'm all about, and even when things are difficult.
That's why I come here.
All right, let's move on to lighter topics. I'm going to go over a bunch of little bits of gaming news, and you can tell me afterwards if there are things that you are especially interested in. Astral Chain has released on Nintendo. It's getting very good reviews. If you like Platinum games, then go ahead and try that one out, although you have to pay for it, so maybe buy that one. Assassin's Creed Odyssey is getting the Discovery Tour mode next week. So I thought that it happened with the Origins one, and I thought maybe they didn't make enough money out of it, so they wouldn't do it for Odyssey, but they are. It's coming. That's awesome. Yakuza 7 has been announced. I will try Yakuza 1 fairly soon, because I want to see what this
so
is all
almost
about.
Almost caught up then, basically. Almost.
Almost.
There.
Almost. And it's going to have some weird turn-based elements of combat, which is, it used to be like a beat-em-up type combat, so that's interesting. Bungie is doing super interesting things with Destiny 2 with Seasons. I would love to talk about it forever. I might talk about it when it releases in early October, when the expansion releases, but essentially they're making Endgame the 90% of part of the game, and it kind of resets every new season. It's a really interesting way of approaching games as a service, and we can talk about it more at some point. Battlefront 2 still has updates. I want to mention it, because Battlefront 2's release was such a crapshoot show that I want to mention the fact that they're following up and they're still doing stuff. Mario Kart Tour is coming on mobile on September 25th. It looks so sad. I want to like it. I want there to be good mobile games, but it looks really sad.
I want this to be good so bad, Patrick. You have no idea. Like I'm putting a lot on Mario Kart Tour. You know, because I kind of feel like games on phones. I know there have been some excellent.
You broke up a little bit. Games on phones.
Games on phones were almost hampered by us moving to touchscreen phones. I kind of feel like if we just had really big screens, but we kept buttons, that games on phones would be in a really good place these days.
You are correct.
Who even knows? But I want Mario Kart Tour to be good so much. It looks really great, and I know it's going to be terrible. And even if it's brilliant, I know I'm not going to play it anyway because I can't play games on my phone. It's from like 2005. But, you know, I just want it to be good. So,
you know how you
so
call
don't say anything bad about it, all right?
Okay, I won't. But you know how you call a phone a screen with buttons? A Switch. It's a Switch. You have a Switch.
Oh,
you
I'll get it on Switch. It. What am I even thinking? I don't need to put it on my phone. I'll get it on Switch. I'll wait for the Switch release.
Excellent.
Can't
wait. Disney is reviving games like Aladdin and Lion King, which is making a lot of people happy. And very quickly, there are a bunch of quote-unquote free games coming if you are a subscriber to different services. Gears 5, as I mentioned, and Dead Cells are coming to the Xbox Game Pass this month. Two incredible games. PlayStation Plus is getting Arkham Knight. I loved it. I almost completely, entirely finished it. And Darksiders 3 in September. Darksiders 3, it like came out 2 days ago. That's incredible. It was a year ago, but still. Celeste, I believe, is free at the moment, or maybe it's already gone, but on the Epic Game Store. If you haven't gotten Celeste, please, wait, let me check that it's still part.
Before you make promises you can't keep.
Yeah.
Don't write those checks if you can't cash them, Patrick. Come on.
You know what? If it's free, I'll put it like this. If it's free, get it now. Stop everything you're doing. Go and get Celeste on the Epic Game Store. If it
isn't...
It's
not free. Buy it anyway. Absolutely.
Yes, exactly.
What is it, like $10 or something?
Game.
Get it.
And Inside. So many great games. Anything in that giant list you want to talk about more except
yeah,
for
I mean,
Mario
actually,
Kart?
Like just keeping on the theme of nostalgia and rose-tinted spectacles this episode, those Disney classic games hit me hard. When I saw those, the Lion King and particularly the Aladdin one, which comes from from the sort of era that I started playing video games in. Am I right in thinking that the SNES version of the Aladdin game isn't happening? It's very specifically the Mega Drive version.
Well, it's possibly the only game that was included, you know, that existed on both platforms. That was better on Mega Drive. So, yeah, I agree. It should
really?
Be Mega Drive.
Because I remember most, yeah, usually with platformers, Mega Drive games felt really janky compared to mm-hmm. SNES games. So yeah. I'd be interested to play that. If this means, scenario, the long-awaited reboot of Mickey's Magical Quest from the SNES, which I still rate as one of the greatest games ever made, then I'm fully in favor of it. Obviously, it's got a lot more to do with the movies that recently came out, but I'd love to see some of those old Disney games come back because they were genuinely brilliant games back in the 16-bit era.
Well, maybe it will be available on Switch. Who knows?
I've already bought it.
Celeste is free until the 12th. So you don't
have
an excuse.
You're never going to have a better reason to get the Epic Games Store than Celeste.
Yeah, and it's free. And if you get it for free and you don't like it, I will personally reimburse you. There you go. All right. Anything else? No PlayStation press conference at Tokyo Game Show. That's a bit weird. But I mean, they still don't have anything else to announce. But, at some point, they're going to have to talk to us about Ghost of Tsushima and The Last of Us Part 2. But we'll see. Steam is updating its library. Finally, it's not 2009 anymore. I guess they're going to be doing cool things with the library. Ubisoft has launched its Uplay Plus subscription service. That is not the biggest of news, but when Watch Dogs 3 comes out, that's at that point, a lot of people will have to decide, do I get the game or do I get, a subscription to Uplay Plus? I think that will be a good opportunity for people to get it, especially since it will also be available on Stadia, which means it will be available not in the best possible way, but it will be available on other platforms than just PC. And, what's her name? Damn it, I have to open the article. You remember the Ikumi Nakamura that presented Ghostwire Tokyo at E3, and she was so lovely.
Oh, the show, yeah.
Well, she's leaving.
Okay, that game's dead to me. Right,
she's leaving the company. So, yeah, there you go. That was a bit of news. The international Dota has seen its first time two-time champion. And if you haven't seen Against the Odds, the one-hour-long documentary about OG winning Dota 2's International 8 last year, go to YouTube, check out Against the Odds. It's an amazing documentary, amazing human story. Doesn't matter if you don't know what Dota is. I didn't. I mean, I know what it is. But and it's super cool, and they won again. So incredible. CD Projekt is now making two series, Witcher and Cyberpunk, in parallel. So they're going to have multiple games in both franchises. That's not very surprising, but it's happening. I don't even want to talk about the NBA 2K trailer with slot machines. That's like loot boxes and slot machines in the same game and trailer. Could talk about
almost it. Like just a massive troll, isn't it?
Almost, yeah. But you know, the reality is, I really think that the people who play those things don't care, meaning they'll play the card games. It's like FIFA Ultimate Team. The people who play it are the kind of people who buy a game a year, and they'll be happy to chug large amounts of money in those things. And I mean,
talking about this on stream yesterday, we're so obsessed with I think a lot of the reasons people are so adamant about denying that things in video games are gambling, when they clearly are.
I'd fight you on that, but okay.
Well, comes from a place, and I think you're doing it right now, comes from a place of saying that all gambling is automatically bad. You know, so it's a very defensive thing. If you say this thing is gambling, someone will technically go, well, I don't think it is, man. You're just buying sticker packets. You don't know what stickers are in there, blah, blah, blah. It's not saying that it's not harmless, but I think we are very loath to label things which clearly are gambling, because we think that means they are automatically bad, and we're scared of the regulation that might come in that respect. I mean, like paid loot boxes are clearly gambling. Sticker packets that you buy in shops for football stickers are clearly gambling on some level. Like Magic the Gathering and Hearthstone cards are clearly gambling.
Yeah, that's the important part. You're saying on some level, maybe on some level, but the reason gambling is such an explosive word is that it means addiction. And a big element of gambling in the way I look at it, maybe there is, I don't know what the clear dictionary definition of it is. To me, there's the prospect of earning money, which leads you to spend way more money than you reasonably should, and even more than you do with the existing, you know, surprise mechanics, as EA puts it. And I'm not trying to defend that just for the sake of it. I genuinely think that gambling implies more dire concepts than what we see in games, because you can't earn money out of it, and thus you don't sell your house to gamble just a little bit more. And that's why I think that's why the reaction to the word gambling is as, you know, strong as you're saying it is, which it is.
I think people that do have genuine gambling addictions might disagree with you on your definition there. Okay. And I think that just because something can be addictive doesn't mean that the noun that describes it implies addictiveness. You know, I don't think the word gambling implies addictiveness in the same way that I don't think, you know, video games imply addictiveness, even though you can definitely be addicted to them. It's interesting. It's a longer philosophical debate than we have time for now, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, that's definitely an interesting aspect of it. And what's for sure is that NBA 2K, essentially 2K putting literal slot machines in their trailer to describe their loot boxes mechanics in NBA 2K is either incredibly tone deaf or trolling, or the reality. I really think that the reality is the people who play these things just genuinely enjoy them and don't care.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that I have never seen any study or actual proof beyond the, oh, it's clearly bad, that it is clearly bad. The worst I've seen is either kids spending a lot of money on the App Store without their parents knowing, which that, of course, shouldn't happen, or people spending, you know, lots on Hearthstone and then thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't have. That was, you know, $500 over the course of a year. I maybe should have spent in food or, you know, saving money for some for my vacation. You know, this is, it's not...
That's kind of the point I'm trying to make with the whole sort of shying away from using the word gambling, because it has different, like, levels and different dangers and things like that. Yeah. And also, it is fun, and you're right, to that audience, it's probably a genuine selling point of the game. It's like when you hear people in the 50s and also now saying, oh, it's just sex and drugs and rock and roll, as if those aren't fun things that we want. You know, it's those are dangerous things, but they're incredibly fun things, and gambling is like that as well. And obviously, there are different levels of it. Like, is buying loot boxes in Overwatch gambling if you pay money for them? In my opinion, absolutely 100% yes. Is it essentially a harmless form of gambling? Yes. Is it fun? Yes. So I feel like we have an element in the industry at the moment which is going, if only we could prove to them that it's gambling, then no one would like it anymore because we'd realize how dangerous it is. And I think that's the complete wrong approach. I think it's okay to call gambling, but it's not automatically dangerous. It's not automatically bad.
Well, with your definition of gambling, I would agree with you. I just don't agree on the definition of gambling, but this is just semantics at this point. I would just put some of these things in a... No. I think it's an important point because this is exactly the kind of specific discussion where people lose themselves into endless arguing because whether, you know, if you call it gambling, then I agree with what you're saying, and maybe some forms of it aren't as bad as people make it out to be, and you're right that people are saying, oh, if we could prove it, that is, to them, if we could make them understand, then they would understand. And the way I look at it is, this is not, it has elements of what gambling is, but to me, there's this essential part of what constitutes gambling, which means that these other activities don't enter into that category. But again, this is just the way we're naming things. The reality we're describing, regardless of the words we use, I think is exactly the same. Overwatch, there are loot boxes, whether they're good or bad. I think they have a fun aspect to them. And actually, not to prolong that conversation too much, which is becoming a theme in this episode, but I was thinking about this a few weeks ago, and a way of showing that, maybe of explaining why I don't have the same distaste for loot boxes, is the mechanics of loot boxes in themselves are not inherently bad. And the way you can see that is that, imagine a game where there are loot boxes for when you level, but you can't actually buy loot boxes. Now, of course, in practice, that probably wouldn't happen because the whole point of putting loot boxes in is that the developer or the publisher can then sell them to you. I understand that. But getting items from the game through loot boxes only through gameplay mechanics without having external money coming in, I don't think would upset anyone. Right. So it's not the loot boxes themselves that are problematic. It's the fact that you can buy it. It's a whole other series of factors which make them problematic. So that's another aspect of that whole conversation I thought was interesting. But
and I totally agree. And, you know, the loot box itself isn't gambling. And when you get it from leveling up in Overwatch, for example, to go back to the example, that isn't gambling, clearly. It's when you buy it with your own cash. I don't think many people would argue that.
Yeah, that's true. But it's just like when you say people, when they get this idea of if we could get people to understand that this is gambling, in the same way, the way I look at it is, some people are saying, oh, but if they could see the bad that loot boxes are, when really what they mean is if they could see the bad that paid loot boxes are, which is maybe even more semantics than what you were saying. And
I think it's an important point. And I don't think we should be afraid to call stuff gambling, even though it seems harmless for that reason. I think it's useful to be able to just say, no, that's totally gambling. Is it dangerous? No, not like some other forms. No.
Well, is it, you know, this is a cigarette. Is it dangerous? Well, this one is okay. That's the way. That's what I hear when I hear what you're saying.
Well, no, because
I know what you mean. I understand. It's again what I associate with gambling. But All right. Okay. Thank you. That was actually a very interesting point that you made. LCG Entertainment bought the name Telltale Games and some of its property, IP. A lot of people said, you know, oh, but Telltale, is it coming back? Like, what about the developers that were laid off, and are they going to hire them back and all of that? This is not LCG, which is a company created by a couple, two or three developers that had nothing to do with Telltale. It's not them buying the company, really. It's them buying the game and some of the IP, which is not even the important IP. So they're going to rework the thing from the ground up, maybe hire some people that used to work on the old games. Many of them have already found other jobs. But it's just Telltale. The name isn't really dead, but will that be a good or a bad thing? Who knows at this point?
Interesting, because it links into something that's been happening recently. I don't know if you know this, but I think it's brilliant that Telltale Games are coming back. Also, I'm in talks to buy the Phileas Club at the moment. just the name, you're sacked, and I'm not really going to bother talking to people from different parts of the world and stuff like that. It's basically just me talking about whatever I want. But hey, Phileas Club, sounds awesome.
You know what? If you have the cash, everything is for sale. And I'll do you one better. We might even do it in the form of several loot boxes. You might get something you like.
I don't know what I've bought until I open the loot box. Or will it be Phileas Club? Or will it be Pixels? Fingers crossed.
All right. I think that is going to
do it. Will I get the French version? Hope not.
I would love to hear your version of my French shows. It would be fantastic.
I don't know. That's basically all I can say.
All right. Thank you so much for spending this time with me discussing and disagreeing with me on some things. It is always lovely when that happens in a cordial environment. If they want more of that cordiality, where would the listeners go, Nick?
You would engage your eyes as well as your ears, and you would make your way over to YouTube, and you'd have a look at our YouTube channel, which is me and my beautiful wife, Evertel. It's called Taliesin and Evertel Do Games. And you can watch us on Twitch streaming as well, Taliesin and Evertel.
That sounds
and
amazing.
We mostly play World of Warcraft. Yeah. Don't bother this week because we're going on guild holiday. But after that, come on down.
So wait, when this week? You mean from this weekend to next weekend?
On Saturday, we are packing our bags and we are going to Barcelona for a week with our guild, with our Warcraft guild.
That's amazing. And it is heartwarming to see that people actually meet in real life still. I've given up on that a long time.
Well, it doesn't exist in WoW anymore. Don't forget that.
But, yes, exactly. Yeah.
Although, of course, we're loot boxing the villa, so we won't know what the villa is until we get there.
Yeah, that would be
One of us is staying in Portugal. You know, they don't know yet.
Talking about travels, are you going to BlizzCon?
We can't.
Maybe.
Talk a lot about that, but it's 99.9% certain that we will be, yes.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you there as well. For me, it's Not Patrick, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, FrenchSpin.com for this show and comments. If you want to comment on what we said, some clever stuff, some dumb stuff, how wrong I am about WoW Classic and loot boxes, feel free to do that at FrenchSpin.com. And we will be back in about a couple of weeks with another episode. Talk to you then. Many hugs to all of you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.